Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, hello to you all and welcome to another edition of Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions. It is yours truly, Alex Alcazaz, a.k.a. the Bear of Texas. And let's welcome back the founder and CEO of Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions himself, ladies and gentlemen, Ricky Litwinkiewicz.
What's up, everybody? And no, I am not wearing a Snuggie.
Well, we wouldn't know because, we wouldn't know.
The video clip will make me look a little buzzy, but I'll digress on that.
Well, you know what? Nobody's going to judge you. I promise you that. But, Ricky, there is definitely some professional wrestling that we have to talk about tonight.
Okay, let's go.
Well, where do we start? Do we save the best for last, or should we just go and start with Ricky Starks?
Ah, Ricky Starks, the forgotten man in AEW. Not a lot of face time there on any of the AEW programming as of late. You know, after he and Big Bill lost the tag team titles, they pretty much said, you know what? Yeah, we got nothing for you. We really should, but we ain't got nothing for you. Stay home, collect a paycheck. Go to the indies, make a paycheck. Probably not as big as the ones he would get on AEW, but yeah, Tony Khan has been at some points considered a blithering idiot when it comes to the talent of AEW, and on videos that I've seen, especially one with the Undertaker on Busted Open Radio, shout out to Busted Open Radio, really good programming, I might add. Yeah, Undertaker said that they kind of dropped the ball with him. Like, he used to train with Ricky Starks, and he, like, as a person, not as a talent, Ricky Starks is really meant for the business. And again, blithering idiot Tony Khan, not using Ricky Starks the way he should, released on Monday, shows up on NXT on Tuesday. He had no 90-day digestive system problems before getting back to work and getting back on camera. So, again, Ricky Starks not being in AEW, probably more beneficial for him than anything else. And we'll get to see more of Ricky Starks the way we really should be than the whole AEW setup. And I'm kind of happy for him.
I agree. I am very happy and excited for him, not only as a journalist who covers professional wrestling along with a lot of other sports, but also on a personal level because I'm happy for him personally as well because he had so much potential, but AEW just had to drop the ball on this guy. I mean, to say that they dropped the ball on him is a major, and I mean a major, understatement.
Well, quoting Mr. John Moxley, when you have a roster of 153 performers, that's a problem. At some point, some performers are not going to get, quote, the spotlight they're supposed to get. However, when you have a talent like Ricky Starks, who belongs under the spotlight, so to speak, regardless of whether he's got a strap or he's tagging with somebody or whatever, pretty much, like, I think his fall from grace was with the whole running storyline with CM Punk before Punk left AEW. And then you get a talent like Big Bill that is kind of, again, running around aimlessly. Like, you kind of get structure with that. Like, that's where some tag teams, you know, become, you know, spotlight people. You put two talents like Big Bill and Ricky Starks together, you should be able to run with that for a little while. And they didn't do it. And Ricky Starks really should have gotten a better end of the stick with AEW. I'm not saying any of his runs on screen were bad. I really do kind of like heel Ricky Starks. I don't like the face part. But again, you know, when you got a roster that big, you cannot cater to the entire roster. It's kind of like a really bad situation. Like, you should have not gone out and, you know, opened the paycheck for that many people to be on the roster if you're going to be sitting there with half of them sitting home most of the year.
Well, that's the biggest problem, if not – I mean, I don't know what the biggest problem right now is. I mean, but here's been the problem since almost the very beginning, an overloaded roster.
Well, think of it also now that AEW is now down to two shows per week. They don't do house shows. So you can't even say, oh, well, we got a bunch of people we can use for a house show. Like, they are a two-show-a-week company now. And I can understand them getting rid of the Friday night show. It really wasn't that great. It was only an hour. And how much can you really do in an hour? Like, you do a crap load of promo. You're mostly promoing for the show the next night after. Which, again, like, I think three shows would be great, but at the same time, how much do you really want to keep overusing talent three times a week? That's usually a problem. So you really should be dipping into the pool more to bring more people in to fill spots. But now you only have 4 hours of programming. A lot of the roster is going to suffer.
It's very, very unfortunate, but what do you think? What do you see that the future has in store for Ricky Starks at NXT?
First off, a name change. Because when you saw him on Tuesday night at NXT, notice how he didn't say his name.
I know.
That was one. Personally, if the fans know him as Ricky Starks, I'd probably keep him as Ricky Starks. A name change? Yeah, I probably wouldn't be a fan of that. Obviously, charisma-wise, don't touch it. The charisma is what got him into the game to begin with. Whether they're going to change his moveset or not, maybe he might add and hopefully not subtract would be a great idea. But throwing him into NXT right now, going along with other stuff that I heard, I don't know if we're going to delve into that or not, but putting him in NXT is putting him in a good spot right now that not only he can elevate himself, but elevate a lot of the other younger talent in NXT to see kind of like what the litmus test is going to be before you make him a main roster guy.
I agree. Him and NXT is perfect. But as far as what you just mentioned, what you heard, what exactly did you hear, my man?
Well, WWE has released 11 performers from their lovely company. And I'm not saying everyone really kind of deserved to be released. For example, you break up a faction with Sonya Deville being released. I thought she was pretty decent in the Rumble, to be honest. But now you're breaking up a faction that actually had some headway on Monday Night Raw. Why? Don't know. The Good Brothers, they got released. One of them's hurt. That's got to suck that you wake up in the morning, you're nursing an injury, and you lose your job. Then again, you know what? I know it kind of feels like it's happened to me before. So
same.
I kind of think of that, and I'm like, all right, well, there's the Good Brothers. They haven't been on TV in forever. Injury possibility, yeah. Maybe you probably could have used the other one for spots. You're not going to reunite him with AJ. I can understand that. That's water under the bridge. They've been there four times already. Maybe at some point when there is a loss of talent, you maybe bring them back in for another cup of coffee. Probably not at the money range that they were paying, but you do that. Okay. the releases WWE had in this week, and I'm going off what I've read, what I've heard, not for the fact that there were a lot of them weren't being used or how they were being used. Okay. There is a very, very large crop of performers down to NXT that need a change. That's to go up to the main roster. Okay. Roxanne Perez has done it all. There's nothing left for her to do there. Bring her up to the main roster. Trick Williams, maybe reuniting him on SmackDown with his former tag team partner, running mate, whatever. Okay, good. Obafemi may have developed way too fast at this point. That, yeah, they're putting the strap on him. They're getting results with him. Put him in the pan while the pan's hot. Let's see how he cooks. So with getting rid of the 11 performers that they got rid of this week, they are making room for them on both SmackDown and Raw to come up from NXT, which means you're going to see a refresh of NXT. And you have talent down there that are helping other ones perform, but like really just progress more than what they are at now. So you got to set the bar a little bit higher now for people at NXT when you bring in somebody like a Ricky Starks. Ethan Page, another guy, has been in the business forever. He's obviously got to help elevate the newbies coming into NXT. And then this Saturday, you have a faction showing up. These are all guys that were on Evolve or what the other show is that WWE has on Tubi. Those guys are coming in. So now, like with doing all of this, you know, spring cleaning in the middle of winter, you know, it's bound to say that it's not like any of these guys are going to get catch on anywhere. Cedric Alexander, after his 90 days is up, is going to probably end up in AEW.
Is he going to join the Hurt Syndicate or is he going to feud with them?
And more likely than anything, he's ending up with the Syndicate. So the Syndicate will eventually have its fourth member. But, you know, it's only been a week. He still has a 90-day no-compete. So we won't see Cedric till May. So it's not even a big deal, but it'll stir the pot a little bit. All right. So being released is not a bad thing. It doesn't say, oh, well, you know what? What we did didn't work. Come back. You know, like we'll figure out what the money and the shit is later. Just get your ass back here to where you were if you haven't signed on with anybody else. And obviously, there's not really any other big players except for AEW at this point. And if they got a 150-person roster, yeah, I don't see that happening either. I wouldn't want to get stuck in that quagmire.
Yeah, I'd probably, you know, stick in the indies, maybe make appearances in Mexico or Japan, maybe work with the National Wrestling Alliance or TNA Wrestling.
Well, really, how would you even say that you changed companies if TNA and WWE merged?
That's actually a very good point.
So you're technically still with WWE, it's almost like saying I'm not putting TNA down because TNA's got a lot of talent there whatsoever too. But that's almost like going to the minors because TNA is not on the level of AEW and TNA is not on the level of WWE. And then if you still had that merger, you're still going to probably end up doing WWE matches anyway. So Stardom for the women, the men for New Japan, GCW would be probably an option for some of them, although it might not be in their talent range. That would be quite different, but again, maybe Gallows and Anderson have, you know, had their last ride. They don't have to worry about going to indies. They've obviously made so much money over the tenure of being in WWE and New Japan. So why would you go any further? You might be at the end of the rope. Just hang them.
That's where I would probably go. Competitors, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they could be hired to work, you know, behind the scenes.
You know what? Out of the both of them, I think Carl Anderson would probably be the only one you'd handle as a backstage producer or a talent agent or somebody that won't be a pencil pusher, but will be able to, or like a trainer, for example. I wouldn't mind seeing Carl Anderson at the training performance center in Orlando. Again, he has the New Japan experience. He has obviously the in-ring experience. He's been through multiple companies. I wouldn't mind him as a trainer. That guy is tough as shit. Like, he has taken beatings and just said, you know what? He's did the little Tim and was like, could you give me more, sir? You know, like, that's the way he kind of is. So, like, I don't say any of them are going to probably hang up most of it, but the two of them maybe. But if you really want to kind of fast forward a little bit, Ricky Starks wasn't the only one that got released by AEW this week.
Oh, no. Miro, that's been confirmed, although he requested his release months ago, believe it or not.
Again, this is another guy, granted, he has been injured in the past. His contract got extended only because of his injury time. That's where I know that Tony Khan is not a bonehead. You have great talent. You extend the contract out due to injury. You probably get the chance to use them a little bit more. In his case, you brought him back to have a feud against Lana? Really? How did that work out? Was that not probably one of the worst AEW storylines of all time? You're going to have him feud with his ex-wife. I don't see that working out well. And the choice of who she had running with her.
Andrade.
Not exactly the greatest choice. I'm pretty sure that was a lot of backstage innuendo BS going on. And then you don't use him. He comes back from injury. You see him barge into Bonehead's office. And you don't see him after that. That's a waste. You should have released him back then. At least, you know, like, I mean, granted, Miro's getting paid if he shows up to events or whatever, whether he's used or not. But, yeah, like, Miro got the ball dropped big time. Stop teasing people. Use the performer. Go on with your business. But, again, 153 people. I want everybody to remember that number. 153 people you have to write storylines for and only put them in 4 hours of programming per week. That is a nail in the coffin for AEW right now.
And, you know, it's unfortunate because WWE dropped the ball with Miro previously. And I thought that when he went to AEW, I thought this was the chance of a fresh start. But how he was used at first as, you know, he was known, wasn't known as the best man. I was like, at first I was like, what is this? I mean, this is goofy. This is goofy. I mean, no disrespect to Kip Sabian or Miro or Penelope Ford. No disrespect at all. But I was like, but I was like, this is just not going to work.
It wasn't the fact that it wasn't going to work. And obviously at some point, you know, the fun and games of having gamers, because all of them are gamers. They are streamers. They game on the internet. That was the way that the whole thing kind of fit, all right? But you're kind of trying to bring him in as a face at that point to see what you're going to get. Obviously, the problem you had was we were dealing with the global bastard at that point. You didn't have fans in seats for months.
He's talking about the pandemic, y'all.
So think of it that way. Like, your litmus test really didn't work until he turned heel. And then you finally had butts in seats at that point. And you got a good run out of him. You got to remember, he was also TNT champion at one point. So you had him running with a strap as a heel. I liked it. It was okay at that point. But once he drops the belt, goes into the storyline depression phase of I can't win, the man upstairs is not helping me, yada, yada, yada. He gets injured, taken off TV. Maybe they should have tried to see what they could have done besides him versus Lana. Like, again, bad story writing is not going to give you a real true crowd feel, crowd opinion, if you're not going to come in with a really good storyline or follow up with something after that storyline.
I mean, I think he suffered numerous injuries during his time. I mean, since All Out of 2022, he didn't have 10 matches after that.
Yeah, because you know what? The neck and that upper back issue is a very severe thing. How he rehabbed, I don't know. But he couldn't use most of his moveset. And people couldn't use most of their movesets because of that injury. And that's a huge problem. Obviously, we go back to like the Daniel Bryan stuff or Bryan Danielson at this point. Edge, Adam Copeland or Cope, whatever you want to call him at this point. you know, those are the two like monumental figures that you're sitting there like, oh, well, you know, they haven't performed in a while. They finally get medically cleared. Maybe he got medically cleared, but AEW was like, yeah, no, we can't afford losing you again. Let's not use him as much, but use him to the extent where he still shows up on TV. But 10 matches in a calendar of 365 days, you obviously, when you had the two shows, Friday and Saturday, couldn't use him because he'd be wrestling twice in one night. So you'd only be able to use him once. And you're obviously not going to have him wrestle Wednesday if he's going to be wrestling on Friday or Saturday. So, again, limitations with that whole injury, that's a big thing. I would like to see what state he's in now. Obviously, he's had a lot more time to train physically. I would like to see potentially him pop up on an indie show, do a match, and let's see physically what he really can be. Like, I think that's the way you kind of get the litmus test to see, oh, do I call Mr. LeBeck and be like, hey, you know what? I kind of had fun there. Obviously, the landscape changed with no McMahon there now. What can we do? Like, can we like do dark matches or whatever or something just to see crowd pop or something? Like, I really would like to see him back. Do I want to see him in the League of Nations thing again? Obviously not. I would like to see him on SmackDown. I think SmackDown would need another performer of his level there. It's lacklusting now with Raw being on Netflix that they overloaded now Raw. It's a possibility. Do I really see it happening? No. But at the same rate, he might be another one, you know, going back to Gallows and Anderson. It might be time for him too.
Really?
I can't see, again, if the injury to his neck is going to be an issue, I would not want to see him show up, ball out, and then burn out at the same time. Remember, times have changed. Movesets have gotten a little bit more advanced. If you end up putting him in there with somebody like a Penta, Mysterio, even an Andrade, like that Lucha Libre style may hurt him a lot more than benefit him at the same time.
We mentioned the injuries. I think injuries have been a huge part of it. Have been a huge problem for him his entire career. Not just in AEW. If I remember correctly, when he was in NXT, he tore his ACL and even broke his neck.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the broken neck issue is now carried on years later. That, again, it's not, first of all, it's not an easy injury to come back from.
Oh, I mean, just, you know, ask Adam Copeland.
Yeah, exactly. Ask him, because it cost him the majority of his career. And even now, kind of, because now he's just a promo guy. Like, they had the Cope open closed. You know, putting him into more major storylines, you know, it's a way to save him for a little while. Until he actually has to be on an event like, again, the event this weekend coming in Australia. And then they now have him versus Moxley coming up. I think it's like next month or something. You know, if there are some times where you got to really take into effect that you can't really put a guy out there if he's kind of got like bubble wrap on him or he's got the fragile sticker on him at this point. So if Miro called it a day tomorrow, I probably would do a Miro Day tribute to him. I actually wouldn't want to call it a Miro Day tribute, you know? But you know, I would, you know, do a dedication to him. Like, hey, you had a great career. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy you wrestling with boots on because your whole thing was doing the bare foot thing. But then he got a foot injury.
Yeah, broke his foot. Boots.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm not going to say that it wasn't a great career. He's had a great career.
Yeah.
Regardless of how you really want to go to examine it, but he's had a good career. He was a champion at least, I think, two or three times.
Yeah.
Not the heavyweight champion, but.
Yeah, three-time U.S. champion.
And then he had the TNT championship. So it's not like he didn't go a career without gold. You know, I can't really put much more of a staple on that. If you win at least one championship in either company, you should get labeled pretty good.
If he were to return to WWE, would he still be known as Miro, or would he have to revert back to the Rusev name?
I think it'd be more of a repackage. Because you really, he probably would be a heel. You know what? I don't think I would bring him back as Rusev, because I think the whole way with the world now as it stands, if you go to bring back like the flag and that whole motif, I don't see that as working well. Obviously, the Miro name was AEW. Are you going to really want to use him as Miro? No. He's going to get repackaged if he comes back. Obviously, new music probably. And God forbid that they use the music company that they're using now, because even wrestlers that have been there for a while can't even recognize their own entrance music. Yeah, I think he totally gets repackaged. Comes in as an ass kicker the way it was when he was Rusev, and run the ball with that. Again, like, I think he's probably going to be a SmackDown guy. I can't see him on Raw. It's overloaded. You got way too much talent there. Reigns, Rollins, Punk, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens. Like, the list is going on and on and on and on. So if he goes back anywhere and he comes back to WWE, it's going to be SmackDown. But I can't see him as Miro or Rusev.
Because I was thinking about this. I mean, if they brought him back and they made him the villainous Russian again that, you know, dedicates his matches and career to Vladimir Putin. And I've been told that if he were to do that now, there would be significant heat because of the whole political situation.
Well, I mean, think of it this way.
There was heat back then, so.
But it wasn't as much heat. And I'll bring up a name that if you were living under a rock or you weren't a fan back at that time, remember the whole Muhammad Hassan deal that they
did? Oh, yeah.
And that was a really, really bad storyline to bring in or character to bring in at the current time. If you want to even go back further than that with like the Iron Sheik and Slaughter changing his whole going from U.S. to being, you know, like Iraq. An army person from Iraq. Like, yeah, that didn't work out well either. So as much as I love people trying to represent their country or a country in this day and age, that would not rock well at all.
I mean,
so
I believe I've read somewhere that when he portrayed the villainous Russian, he actually, this caused him to have legitimate heat in his native Bulgaria. Now, I don't know if it's true or not, because again, can we always trust the dirt sheets, Ricky?
No, you can't. But you know what, though? Like, you can kind of get a feel from, you know, heat outside of the building. You know what I mean? Like, the world now is like, oh, we see something, we're going to jump on it. And right. If you're catching that heat, not as a storyline, but a lot of people still in their heads don't believe that, you know, there's this thing called kayfabe. You know, like people sometimes, MJF, for example, is probably the perfect example of this, right? So MJF lives his character 24/7. He's a dick in the building. He's a dick outside of the building. So if you get somebody like Rusev that might be doing that, then you're obviously going to get jumped on it for it, because people just don't give a crap about people's regular lives, you know? So I wouldn't I wouldn't doubt it if he was catching heat for that at the same time. But again, like, who are we to know? We're not the ones there. We're not the ones, you know, behind the scenes seeing stuff that, you know, irritate people. You got to kind of think of it that way.
And you mentioned the Muhammad Hassan character. Now, I've had a lot of questions asked to me about that, but as we know, because he did an interview, you know, right when the whole pandemic started, he did the interview with Chris Van Vliet, and he revealed that he was actually going to win the title from Batista at SummerSlam, which took place in Washington, D.C. And it's just sad that the character died because there was that infamous spot with The Undertaker and those masked henchmen. And then a few days later, the London bombings happened.
See, that's where sometimes you got to just be smart and quietly move people off screen. And I know during the McMahon era, which is obviously four decades plus of, you know, calamity. But when you got a hot guy like Rusev, you gotta run with him. You made that bed, you gotta lay in it. But again, like, you kind of look at it and you're like, what do you really do? And again, I think now with Triple H, you know, AKA Paul Levesque, running the deal, I think he has his nose to the ground a little bit more than McMahon. So he'd be better smart to not do things like that than revert back to something old.
Right. And as far as, yeah, everybody asked me, did the whole Muhammad Hassan character, did it offend me? No. Look, number one, back then, I wasn't as smart enough as I am now. Yeah, I hated him, obviously, but everyone asked me, like, because he's Italian portraying an Arab guy, like, no, I do not find it offensive. I mean, come on.
It's acting, people.
Yes.
Get with it.
It's because I've been asked, Alex, if you were a wrestler, if they wanted you to portray a heel anti-American Arab, would you do it? I mean, no, because number one, I mean, my accent, number one, and, you know, it, for me, it just would not work.
I'd try, but, you know,
I would try. You got to keep in mind, because I don't want to bring politics into this, but, you know, recently I'm of Syrian descent, and there was the Syrian dictator. I mean, I was asked, like, if they wanted me to portray an Assad sympathizer, would I do it? I would say no, because it would negatively impact my family.
I probably would just, you know, have to say to myself, suck it up, Buttercup. That would be one. And two, show me the money.
Wow.
Because if you have to act on a stage like that and you're making a decent paycheck, hell's yeah. I don't care about the criticism. At the end of the day, I'm changing clothes. No, especially if I wear a mask. That would be very big key. Nobody would know me outside of the mask. That's where I think I would definitely survive more. But if I'm there and I'm getting paid to do something, I would fucking give it a go.
I mean, you're not wrong, but the biggest issue of the whole thing is the Assad regime murdered members of my family. So that's probably why at the end of the day I would say no. I cannot, even if it's a character, I cannot pledge allegiance to a man that murdered members of my family and murdered people that were close to my family.
On personal reasons, yeah, I would definitely make that a fact. Obviously, Sami Zayn couldn't go to frickin' Saudi because of all of the religious stuff.
But then because I think there were tensions between Syria and Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure. I don't pay attention to Middle Eastern politics. I mean, these would be questions, you know, for my dad. But again, the whole thing, you know, if I portrayed a pro-Assad character on TV, it would be no. But again, what you said, yeah, you're right about the heat and everything, but because I had family members murdered by the Assad regime, it would be an automatic no. And if Vince were to fire me, well, then fine, fire me. I don't care.
All right, so we're gonna jump to the third release, and he probably is not going to get as much time as obviously Ricky Starks or Miro. I think the issue that we go with Malakai Black. Okay, formerly known as Aleister Black. Obviously, the Black keeps running. This was kind of a long time coming for him too.
We thought this happened actually years ago because one of the first episodes of this show was that we thought that Malakai Black was gone from AEW, but he was the one that actually said, no, this did not happen. I mean, he called the whole situation fake news.
But you know what, though? In a way, this is a veteran guy. And I mean veteran because it wasn't just, oh, he wrestled in WWE. He was wrestling in the UK for a really, really long time. Okay? His name in the UK kind of is not in my brain right now. I know it was Tommy something. He's been around the block for a really, really long time. Longer than Miro, a.k.a. Rusev. Obviously a lot longer than Ricky Starks. And I really hope they don't give him some really bastardizing name because that would be horrible for him. But he has been around the block a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's another one that the flame kind of dwindled out on a little bit. I would have thought of him to be more of a main event player for a longer time, especially after the Cody Rhodes feud. I'm not going to say that the House of Black was a bad spot for him. I absolutely loved that faction. It was more of his style. Like the AEW did it better than WWE did when he was doing the Aleister Black gimmick. But when you're pairing him with three talents that are legit off the chain. Buddy Murphy, I cannot give that guy enough props for not only his style, his moveset, but his character is just on point. Julia Hart, up and coming in the AEW women's division. Granted, her getting hurt was a minor setback. But
very unfortunate.
She's very talented for a performer at her age.
Big time.
And then you got the big man. Brody King, another guy, very, very huge on the indies. They pull him out of Ring of Honor, which was a positive. But when you put him in a talent set like that, like, even if you're if you feel like you're a little bit on the decline, like, you have so much backup. And toward the end, where, like, even, like, his last match was in November. You know, I don't think that AEW was a good vacation for him. And, again, like, I love House of Black, but as a solo guy. Because, let's be honest, if you're rolling solo for so long that you don't, they don't keep you on a good level, you're going to kind of get tired of that. Again, along the lines of the same kind of motif that's been running on, you have Ricky Starks, don't use him. You have Miro, you don't use him. You sporadically now don't use Malakai Black at all. Like, these are top-tier talents. He got tired of it. He's going to end up, again, another guy that if they bring him into WWE, put him on SmackDown, he'll be with his wife, which I'm pretty sure that's not exactly the greatest situation either at home. That Zelina Vega is in one place and he's in another place. They're a very good couple. They work well together. Again, both very talented. But SmackDown could use a guy like him. Again, they could use Miro or Rusev or whatever you want to call him at this point. They could use him as a thing there. Again, rumor, I put this in big quotation marks, he could probably be the new leader of Judgment Day. Bring him back into that dark, sinister area where Judgment Day used to be, instead of being like the street trash version of Judgment Day. So it's not like they don't have storyline to put him in. They don't have to worry about character motif with what he could do. If you bring him back into that dark, sinister thing again, pre-AEW, but spice it up more, you know? Like, I think that would be kind of like the best thing for him.
I agree, because at first I thought, okay, does he go back to NXT? Now, you mentioned it, SmackDown, okay, if Aleister Black, okay, well, first of all, does he go back to the name Aleister Black, or does he go with Malakai Black?
You probably could bring him back as Aleister Black.
I prefer honestly. But I really like the idea of him actually leading the Judgment Day. Like, imagine he overthrows Finn Balor. Finn Balor turns face. They built it up to the point where it's a huge match, and Finn Balor reverts to the demon persona. Hey, I would love that.
Well, as much as I love the demon persona, I'm not going to lie. I think that demon persona is dead. Like, if it was like a whole thing, like when they did the Demon versus Bray Wyatt, I think that would be the specialty for it. But obviously, if you're watching Raw lately, and at some point, like, I know that whole character door, transfer door is closed now. At some point, I think you're going to see a very big breakup of Judgment Day. They're already laying the foundation for it. Balor don't care. Everybody else wants to do other stuff. You know, at some point, you're going to see that evaporate. But the only way you keep it up is, again, you had a character like Damian Priest. You know, they had the whole kind of dark persona to him. And then you break him away from that. Rhea, the same thing. The goth metallic character, you take her away from there, and what do you really have? You know, like, if you want to keep Judgment Day around, freshen it up a little bit. I actually do agree with the way they say it. Maybe they need a new member. He's available. Why would you not bring another heavy hitter in? McDonough's not going to be back for God knows how long. So you got to freshen that up a little bit. But an overthrow? Yeah, I definitely could see that.
Definitely. Well, I think that's pretty much it, but there's one more thing I'd like to briefly talk about. There's a superstar in AEW lately that, well, lately what she's been doing, all of a sudden I'm a huge fan of hers, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
Are you talking about Harley Cameron?
Yeah.
The hot box of rocks that's running around with a puppet.
I mean, come on. Hey, Conan even said that he's entertained by her. She is entertaining. You can't deny that.
All right. So we talked about this off camera. We're now talking about it on camera, on mic. This is something that I think AEW kind of needs. And I only say kind of because obviously over the last 2 years, AEW is not using gimmicks. Gimmicks kind of work. And the only way I could say they kind of work, okay? I'll bring up two names, and you'll be a little weirded out by the two names that I bring up. But they're gimmicks. But they're gimmicks that worked, okay? Go back a little bit on WWE. You had R-Truth. He's still kind of a gimmick now, which is kind of good. But then you also have another gimmick, Hornswoggle. Like, those were popular gimmicks. AEW brought in a gimmick, and they were like, screw this, it doesn't work. That was Danhausen. Danhausen is extremely popular on the indies, but apparently was not popular with AEW higher-ups. So this is another stab at them using another gimmick performer to get a little bit of pop out of the crowd. That's the way I kind of look at it. But they are not big on using gimmick performers. So I don't see how long the whole Harley Cameron thing is going to last to any extent.
Yeah, but, you know, tremendous wrestler and, you know, very talented ventriloquist. I mean, we saw that segment. I mean, hey, a lot of people loved it. And obviously, she's going to challenge Mercedes Moné for the TBS Women's Championship. Well, you know what's so cool about it is guess who's producing that match?
Who?
That would be Dustin Rhodes.
Well, again, like I don't put it past Dustin, but it's a prediction and a spoiler at the same time. Do you really honestly think they're going to have Harley Cameron upset Mercedes Moné on the pay-per-view?
It breaks my heart. I mean, first of all, it breaks my heart that it was only just recently that I became a fan of Harley Cameron, because after doing much research, I feel like I should have became a fan of hers a long time ago. But I'm told, you know what, Alex, better late than never. But to answer your question, no, but well, you know what would be, you know what's even sadder is because Toni Storm, Timeless Toni Storm, is challenging Mariah May for the championship. Well, first of all, let me ask you, do you think Toni Storm is going to regain the title?
Yes.
Okay, because.
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a second. But as heartbreaking as it sounds, no, I want Harley Cameron to win the championship, not just because it's in Australia, but, you know, she's been paying her dues and all of a sudden, you know, she's on fire. But if she were to win the title, that would be a mistake because that's called rushing it. I mean, they got to keep building her, right?
Okay, so this is where, again, like, Harley Cameron is still a rookie. My issue with now the whole let's throw Harley Cameron against Mercedes Moné is a problem AEW's had for a really, really long time. They overload their card. They're doing an overseas pay-per-view. What do you really else got going on in that women's division? You've already kind of killed off Statlander, right? Storm has got a title match. What else are you doing? What else are you doing?
Well, speaking of gimmicks, you mentioned gimmicks earlier. Toni Storm, I mean, the Timeless Toni Storm character, I mean, that's a gimmick. And when Chris Statlander had the alien gimmick, personally, I loved it. I was entertained by it. I get why they seized it, but
again, it wasn't, it was not. Okay, so when I talk about gimmick, I'm thinking more of the comic relief gimmick.
Okay.
R-Truth is still running the comic relief gimmick. Okay? Hornswoggle, again, comic relief gimmick. I'm not talking about like the alien gimmick. I'm not talking about the Toni Storm gimmick. I'm talking about that whole comic relief thing. And my look at it is if you're not entertaining the crowd with the matches, you're obviously not entertaining the crowd with the promos. How are you going to entertain the crowd? Comedy relief.
Mm-hmm.
And AEW is not big on that. WWE is not big at it right now because obviously their talent load is huge. That, again, Jey Uso is going to get the crowd over with the whole Yeet celebration at the beginning, right?
Which LA I love, Knight, obviously.
LA Knight has the pointing with the yeah at the end. They have guys that have things that get the crowd going. Seth Rollins, in the beginning of his match, in his walk-in, he's got the crowd going. Cody has the crowd going. There's the entertainment value. AEW is not showing that. So now they have to revert back to comedy relief to keep the crowd involved in the event.
Gotcha. Well said, but everything with Harley Cameron, I mean, obviously I'm rooting for her, but y'all know, but you just predicted Toni Storm is going to regain the title.
I think that they have a better run unless the thought that's been stuck in my head since she's come back to Timeless Toni Storm, okay? If she doesn't beat Mariah May, Mercedes Moné's next opponent should be Toni Storm. Never had a match against each other. First time ever. And it's an alternative. If you still want to keep Mariah May as champion, why not you kind of cut Mercedes down a little bit? Two heel female champions. I'm not always a fan of having every champion as a heel. I've said that in the past.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe, just maybe, like that first time ever would be nice. if you don't have Tony Storm win, oh, well, you know what? We got Mercedes Moné running around with four straps. She could lose one. She's on the Indies. She's got three other straps she has to defend and travel for. Possibilities.
Well said. Well said. Well, I think we've done it all. Anything else, Ricky?
No.
Well, before I let everybody go, before we get off the air, tell everybody about your current project, Ricky.
Oh, 6ix9ine Radio. You guys are all missing out. If you've not caught 6ix9ine Radio on the Zeno Radio app, get there. We had a lot of programming on this week. We had Four Corners podcast. This show was on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Pipe Bomb Radio is going to be on there twice this week. Metallic makes its return to the airwaves next week. It's going to be fun. So go and check out 6ix9ine Radio.
Right. And I actually want to thank everybody that reached out because, as everybody knows, the episode that was on this week for Ringside Chaos, that Raw recap, was not done well. Clearly, it was obvious that I rushed it. I was obviously, you could hear that stress. I mean, the anxiety kicked in. So I went ahead and redid it, but and that one did not make 6ix9ine Radio. Of course, I'm sure you heard, Ricky. I gave you a shout out, and I gave a shout out to Chris, who's the one of the producers for the Four Corners podcast. And once again, guys, I really appreciate the kind words. I really do.
Well, we all are a big team here. You know, 6ix9ine Productions is crazy.
Yeah. And yes, everybody, look, Chris and I, we've been on good terms for months now. Yeah, but we are on good terms. So I just want everybody to know. Yeah, Chris and I are on good terms. And obviously, Ricky's a huge part of that. But no, I'm happy to say that Chris Rex and the Bear Man, me, we're cool, y'all. We're cool. And look, whatever we have been through before, it's all in the past. All right. It's all in the past. So.
Oh, and a little tiny update. The Four Corners podcast is now officially on TikTok.
All right. Awesome. Well, great to hear because, you know, the Four Corners podcast, look, if you love this show, you will love the Four Corners podcast. Let me tell you, because Ringside Chaos and the Four Corners podcast, as Ricky mentioned, is part of the 6ix9ine Radio program. So, Ricky, and I thank you so much for allowing my show to be part of it.
We, believe it or not, we are the OGs. The OGs of 6ix9ine Radio with more coming.
Mm-hmm. And if everybody's wondering, will Chris be on the show? Yes. When? Well, we'll cross the bridge when we get to it. You see, just like in that episode, we do not want to rush things. So, but yes, I will have Chris on the show, and we're going to have him at the same time as Ricky, but I'm just not sure when. But ladies and gentlemen, I can assure you, Ricky can assure you, it's going to happen.
Yes.
So you can find this show, Ringside Chaos, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and it's back on YouTube. So please hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. That way, Ricky and I know for sure that you're not going to miss out on any exciting upcoming content. And if you would be so kind, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star review because those really help. And if you could leave your thoughts down below in the comments, if you're listening on Spotify on your cell phone, well, that would be greatly appreciated as well because we are always curious to know what you have to say. Thank you all very, very much, ladies and gentlemen. Ricky, thank you so very, very much. I cannot wait to do it again soon, sir.
Anytime, my friend, anytime.
All right. Everybody have a good night and God bless.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning. So you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.